From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the third day of April 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson. A bit later in the program, we'll check in on the agricultural news for the afternoon, what's been happening in Washington, D.C., and the potential for the southern border to close that may have passed at this point, and that'll be good news for most in agriculture. We'll also check the weather forecast, too, with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and we'll do it all on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, on this Wednesday afternoon, we're joined by Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson. Hey, good afternoon to you, Jackie. Hope you're having a good day.
Good afternoon, Todd. I hope you are, too.
I am indeed. So let's start in the place we have quite a few times in recent years with the support and resistance numbers, please.
Well, I'm going to support for May corn 356, 340, and 330. Resistance 365, 376, and 398. And again, these are based on weekly numbers. July support 351, 342, and 313. And resistance 380, 389, and 403. When we look at beans, May beans have support at 883, 856, and 839. Resistance 910, 918, and 953. And when you look at July, support 896, 871, 855. And resistance 922, 938, and 970. One of the things you can see, if you've been following these all the time, is that we're now starting to see things, the resistance and the support numbers are getting closer to each other. In other words, you know, we're getting further out there, and we're getting into some areas where we're either going to do a lot of very tight range trading, or we're going to break out on one of these days, either way.
You've been following the inspections reports pretty closely. What do they tell us?
Well, corn's up 25.6% over a year ago. Disappointing. You know, we were up, almost 50% above a year ago. Beans are down 31.2%. Beans actually have been making a rebound. They were much, much worse than this. And wheat is down 6.2%. So we just keep plugging along. It's hard to say what's going to happen in the future here just because of the fact that so much depends upon what our acreage situation really ends up being, and we don't know where that is right now.
Speaking of which, did you take a look very closely at the acreage figures that USDA reported out on the end of March?
I did, and I'll be the first to tell you that I was pretty surprised. I didn't think that we had seen, I vocally said, I didn't think we'd see a lot of change here in the three I's. That was wrong. Corn in Illinois up 200,000 acres, Indiana 150,000, Iowa 400,000, Kansas 250, Minnesota 100,000, South Dakota 700,000 acres increase in corn. Those are the intentions, of course. Now, so that means Illinois is looking to lose 300,000 in beans, 250,000 lost in Indiana, Iowa 600,000, Kansas 200,000, Minnesota 500,000, and South Dakota 450,000. So some very significant intentions. Now we'll have to see once, what the weather really allows us to do, I guess.
When you've been talking to your clientele, do these numbers bear out for you?
Pretty much. I was just surprised. I mean, I know that, you look at Nebraska, up 100,000 on corn and down 300,000 on beans. You know, everybody's talking about the same thing. You know, corn has a much better potential at the price that we're at to be able to produce more. And so, if you put a pencil to it and you look at your costs and you look at the potential for yield, corn just pencils better, even though it's more expensive to plant. I do think, Todd, that we're going to see numbers of farmers who might be in some financial straits who are going to find themselves forced into beans just because the bank either won't give them the money or, we've talked about this before. We're seeing seed companies and we're seeing fertilizer companies taking liens against crop insurance so that these guys can plant. And so, the whole economic background will drive some of where we end up too as far as total acres go on the bean side of things.
You know, last Friday when USDA released that acreage or the prospective plantings report, it also released some grain stocks figures. They included on and off farm numbers. What'd you make of those?
Oh, yeah, and that's actually one of my, to me, you know, the grain stocks is so much more important than the acreage is, primarily because when you look at yield is what determines everything. And so, you know, big acres, big yield, big crop. You can have smaller acres, big yield, and still have a pretty big crop. But when it comes to grain stocks, it's an indicator basically of whether the farmer has been marketing and or what our usage is. And I looked at the on-farm stocks, and this is disturbing, I'll tell you right up front. For corn, last year we had 56.25% of the grain stocks on the farm. Right now we have 59.6%. And we had 40.5% of the beans on the farm. Right now we have 46.8%. So, you know, all that means is that at some point in time, this stuff is going to have to move. And what I'm hoping is that, you know, those bushels that are sitting on the farm maybe have some marketing done on them already. You really don't know. But it's just it's a scary situation. Let's just put it that way.
You know, last Friday when these numbers all came out, it was pretty rough for the corn market, down, what, about 17 cents in the lead option numbers. Things have been much quieter for this week.
Yeah, they have. You know, it's the typical situation. You have a reaction and an overreaction sometimes. Yeah, I think that they were pretty shocked that the numbers came in as far as the stocks go higher on corn, lower than a year ago, you know, but about 200 million higher than what the average guess was. And so that was disappointing. There's no question about it. I think the reality has set in, and now, you know, we're back to trading. This has been a tough market, Todd, to be absolutely honest with you, you know, because it seems to have, you know, it has its days where we just will take a bounce and it'll be like wild. And the next day, you either give it all back, you know, or you give by the next two or three sessions, it's all gone again. And so that tells you that there's a lot of day traders involved in the marketplace, people who are in here who are saying, okay, if I can make a profit, I'm going to make a profit and then I'm going to run. And they don't really care if the market goes higher or lower. They're, you know, unlike our farmers. And so that makes for a very emotional roller coaster. So that's another reason that I really believe, Todd, it's just absolutely so important that the farmer markets and that he has a handle on everything, so he doesn't let his emotions get out of hand and feel either like a failure, you know, or just freeze. Let's put it that way. Just plain freeze up and not be able to make a decision.
Hey, did I see that Informa released some numbers, and were those for the upcoming World Agricultural Supply Demand Estimates reports in April or something else?
Well, yeah, what they released was their estimate crop size, okay? And so, you know, on the wheat crop, they came in at the production numbers of 1.935 million bushels versus 1.884 last year. And the world wheat or the world corn crop came in 2 million metric tons at 770, basically higher than where we were, just due to a higher India crop. You look at Russia, you know, on the wheat crop, 76 versus 71 last year. And we know that because we keep hearing how they're out there competing against us. EU 155 versus 137.6. So you can see the trend here, right? I mean, you know, it's higher numbers, basically. They left the world corn crop near that 1.106 million metric tons compared to 1.102 last year. If you look at the U.S., 383.6 versus 366, so that's up for us. Brazil, 94.5 versus 80.8 last year, and Argentina, 46.5 versus 31.5. But essentially what they're saying is, you know, these are the places that it's going up. There are other places that it's going down. Informer with the bean crop came in at 358.5 million metric tons compared to 338.9 last year. And so Brazil, 114.5 versus 119.3 last year. So, you know, that's almost 5 million metric tons less. But then you got Argentina at 55 versus 37.8 because of their drought last year. And so, you know, they've tipped the scales. I mean, they're picking up 17 million metric tons versus Brazil losing 5 million metric tons. And so basically they're just looking at world production and kind of giving an early view of what they see as to what they think is going on.
That's a good tally of the supply side. One last item. We've talked about China, African swine fever. Of course, this goes to the demand side. It has decimated the herd there. Do we have any more information? It seems to come out in dribs and drabs.
It does. Yeah, well, what I'm going to do, Todd, is I'm going to repeat what I said last week, but then I'm going to add a few extra things that have come out. And that sow herd is down approximately 41% in the last 7 months, you know, due to the African swine fever. That estimated loss is 700 million hogs. Can you even picture that? I have a hard time. Production down 15% to 30%. So they're saying that they would need to import 10% more pork, which if you look at 7 million lost, that's 70 million. The U.S. hog herd is only 74.3 million. So if we capture 2.5%, it would raise our monthly exports by 257 million pounds. So that's a 48% increase over the 526 million pounds per month that we've been averaging right now. But, you know, their loss, just a 10% change is 70 million. It's just absolutely amazing to me. Yeah, I know. I can't picture quite that many hogs in that, you know. Good thing hogs are, you know, you can increase the hog herd relatively quickly. The question is, will our farmers want to do that or not? And how long will this demand stay? You know, will China kind of pull back on some of their export or their imports, or will they actually keep doing this down the road? Nobody knows.
Hey, thanks so much.
Yep. Thank you, Todd. Have a great day.
You too. That, of course, is Jackie Vakes. She is with Stuart Peterson. Well, you know, in Washington, D.C. this week, there were some setbacks for U.S. producers on disaster aid and trade, but there were also some hopeful developments. Billions in disaster aid, including for farmers and others hit by historic Midwest floods, failed to clear Senate procedural hurdles in a political spat over hurricane funding for Puerto Rico. Senate Finance Chair Chuck Grassley told farm reporters that Majority Leader Mitch McConnell would bring up a GOP version again. But here's what McConnell had to say a day after failed votes on competing bills, including the Republican measure.
For those in the path of last month's tornadoes in Alabama and Georgia, and for large swaths of the heartland still grappling with floodwaters. So I'm disappointed that political games carried the day, but I assure the American people our work on this subject is far from finished.
Ditto for the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade deal, which Finance Chair Chuck Grassley says he won't move through his committee until the president ends his steel and aluminum tariffs against Mexico and Canada, which holds elections, by the way, in June.
It's just time until the president wakes up. And I don't know why it's taking him so long to realize he's got a victory at hand. Just take these tariffs off. They got to come off.
Grassley doubts the president's redeployment of customs agents from border ports of entry to deal with illegal crossings will further hurt the USMCA deal, but concedes it could hurt existing trade.
Common sense tells me that. But either way, it's affecting agriculture to some extent, or to a great extent. And the president ought to remember that one of his very positive things he's done is turn this economy around.
In the meantime, Mr. Grassley predicts a U.S. trade deal with China by the end of April, amid the fifth round of bargaining and progress on a host of thorny issues like currency manipulation, trade secret safeguards, and foreign investment reforms. You know, each and every day right here on Illinois Public Media, you can stay up with what's happening in Chicago at the CME Group with the opening market report, the mid-morning report, the midday report, and of course the closing market report. It's a great way to stay up with the prices and what's impacting your bottom line, and we do it every business day of the year. And then we wrap it all up with Commodity Week at the end of the week. It's a great way to keep track of what's happening to your farm from the outside marketplace. So come visit us online at WILLAG.org. There you can catch up on all of that news and read the latest from the agricultural economist from the University of Illinois as well. We have the Farm Doc Daily Feed inserted right there at WILLAG.org. You're listening to the Closing Market Report for this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you. And good afternoon to you, too.
Hey, it's a beautiful day here. It's a good day to dry things out, but I guess that's not going to stick around for very long.
Well, you have to define what drying things out is. I mean, if you're trying to dry your towel that you dry you used in the shower this morning, then you probably make it. But if you're trying to dry the top 8 inches of soil or even 4 inches, it might be a little bit more challenging. We do have frequent weather disturbances lined up to move across the Midwest as we go forward through the next 2 weeks. And my problem with the whole outlook here isn't so much the volume of rain as much as it is the frequency of rain. It's just too great. We're not going to have enough sunny, dry, warm days in between precipitation events to really firm up the ground in any particular location for any great amount of time. So that's the biggest concern. Now, not everybody's going to be in that same boat, but boy, it's going to be a large part of the Midwest that's really going to be slow at getting into the fields. And we already have that issue in parts of the Delta and the Tennessee River Basin. And the Southeast has done fairly well, but they too are going to turn a little bit wetter for a little while here. I think for them, it's not much of an issue. But certainly the Midwest, especially as we go into the second half of this month, it's one thing to be a little slow in early April. It's another thing if it's late April and we're still slow. And that's what my biggest concern is that this pattern will continue into the latter part of the month and maybe into early May as we shift the jet stream farther north.
What is it about the pattern that gives you confidence that that may be the case?
Well, there's quite a few things, but the strongest thing is that lunar cycle, I often refer to it as the 18-year cycle, but that is really the main source of the reasoning here. It has played a very strong role in weather across North America since last fall, and the pattern doesn't show any reason for breaking down for any great length of time. I also see a negative Arctic oscillation beginning to evolve up in Canada. What that will do in about a week to week and a half is it'll give us a stronger northern branch of the jet stream, bring cooler air down into the northern plains and upper Midwest, and that'll push the jet stream just far enough to the south to put that storm track back over the heart of the Midwest. And that, in addition to a little ridge building in the southeastern corner of the U.S. that'll pump moisture out of the Gulf of Mexico along with warm air, it sets the stage for frequent storm systems. And on top of that, we have a very warm tongue of water off the California coast, the southern California coast in Baja California. And every storm system that comes in on the southern branch is going to carry in large amounts of moisture from that warm, moist tongue of water. So I think it's going to be really hard to avoid this pattern.
Turn your attention to South America. How's second crop corn doing?
Very good. In fact, it's April, and quite often in many years, April is usually the end of the wet season. It looks like we're going to have rain continuing for at least the next 2 weeks, and probably even later than that, which means that the corn crop is going to have sufficient moisture to carry it all the way through its reproductive process. And so we'll end up with some very big yields. The wet season will likely come to an end later in April, and certainly May will be dry biased again. And so that crop's going to be huge, I think.
What are early season conditions like in Eastern Europe, Ukraine, and Russia?
Well, right now they're mostly good, but there is some dryness in the soil in some areas. For instance, Hungary and Romania and parts of Ukraine, a little dry biased. There's a few forecasters out there that have issued summer outlooks for hot, dry weather into the summer and another big drought like last year, and I do not buy into that. I think that we're going to see a better environment. The next 2 or 3 weeks are going to be a little drier biased, but when we get into late spring and early summer, I think it'll be raining when it needs to, and I don't see a repeat of last year's drought.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Have a great day.
You too. That is Drew Lerner with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.